I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
J. Cross, how good would you say you are at the guitar?
I would say I...
Your three choices are beginner,
yes,
intermediate,
yes,
or advanced.
Probably beginner.
Okay, excellent. How would you like to move up to intermediate?
I'd really like to be an intermediate guitar player. That's the only thing I've ever wanted to be.
Good. That's about as far as you'll get.
Yes.
Unless you use Guitar Tricks.
Okay, tell me more.
Guitar Tricks is an excellent website to teach you how to move from beginner to intermediate to advanced guitar.
Okay.
Whether you're just starting out or whether, you know, you could be, you should be better than you are.
Like me.
Indeed.
Yes.
Guitar Tricks will help you move through those stages as a guitar player. And good for you, J. Cross. We have worked together with Guitar Tricks to bring a 14-day free trial to not only you, but to the listeners of the Guitar Nerds podcast.
So that means I can try it for 14 days, and if I'm not into it, just cancel it.
You can, indeed.
But I'm probably going to be into it.
I think you probably will.
Okay.
You'll notice a swift advancement of your guitar skills.
Excellent.
So do you want to know where you can get this offer?
Where can you get the offer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Can you repeat that for me?
I can. GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Is there like an app that you can use, or do you have to do it on your computer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Hello and welcome. Hello and welcome to another episode of Guitar Nerds, the popular guitar-related...
Well.
Popular-ish.
Well.
Unpopular guitar-related podcast.
It's a podcast?
It's a podcast. Yes.
It is. I don't know. Does anyone actually listen to it on an iPod? Does that even exist anymore?
Is that where podcasts came from?
I assume so.
I don't know. I don't think
people recorded them in pods.
Wales.
All right, I'm going to start again because I feel that, you know, that
we've already started broadcasting live. The notification told me.
Hello and welcome to Guitar Nerds, the popular guitar related podcast where I, your host, Joe Brandon, am joined by the Doctor of Pedalology, Matthew Knight, and the Professor of Power Chords, J. Cross. Gentlemen, good evening.
Hi.
Hello.
Host, Joe.
Yeah, thanks very much. So, podcast listeners, you will notice that, once again, we are Mark Packham-less, I'm afraid. Mark Packham is now on his second week of recovery from an operation with a 3-day recovery time. But, of course, we can't all be, you know, unbelievable man mountains such as the three of us here.
It's true.
Yes, it is true. But yeah, so we are Mark Packham-less again, but don't let that deter you. We've got a whole host of awesome stuff that we've been putting together this week, as we knew Mark Packham would not be with us. Well, actually, he told us yesterday, quite late,
yeah,
that he wasn't going to make it.
But that's fine.
Yeah, we don't mind. Actually, everything's going to be better because it means that, hey, we wrote the podcast, so it is going to be much better. Anyway, how's everyone been? Matthew Knight, how has your week been?
I am good, and my week has been good. On non-guitar related things, I'm halfway through training for the Brighton Marathon, so I spend most of my time being tired.
Oh, that is pretty spec.
Yeah, what did you, you've done it before, haven't you? What did you do last time?
I have
time?
Done it before. I did it in 3:59.18.
What's your what are you looking for this time?
3:55. Yeah, just shave a whole hour off, you know. I'm going for the record. The current course record is 2 hours, 8 minutes. So if I can, you know.
2 hours, sure. 8 minutes?
Yeah, that is.
That's great. Someone running 13 miles an hour.
That is so unnecessary.
For a full 2 hours.
Get a car.
Well, I mean, in fairness, they probably, knowing Brighton, they probably travelled further than if they'd done the course in a car in that period of time. That, but, that, you know, it's true. Fine.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, in guitar-related news, what have you been up to?
In guitar-related news, a bit of a weird one, and it's in the early stages, but on Instagram, I follow Hovercraft Amplifiers because they make some great amps.
They make great amps. You've bought two, haven't you?
I have bought two. Well, every time I see your band, I miss the first one that I sold you.
And which was a Dwarvenaut 20.
Yeah, serial number 7
of 250, I believe.
Yeah, something like that. I can't quite remember. But he put on there the other day, he always posts pictures of amps or motorbikes because he mods motorbikes. And I think towards the last part of last year, he basically said, I'm going back down to a one-man operation. So he just works out of his workshop. And he put a picture of a Dwarvenaut 20 head case, just the shell, in pink Tolex.
Oof.
So I just like emailed him out of the blue and went, what are you going to do with that pink amplifier? And he's like, oh, well, sort of saving it for something special, but perhaps we could collaborate on a thing. You know, I hit him with all the guitar nerd stuff. I was like,
all the spiel.
You know, and he was like, oh, well, you know, you guys are the best. Of course I want to do something with you.
Oh, that'd be great.
So I don't know. Perhaps we might start talking about some sort of
a hovercraft guitar nerd amp head.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's what we want. That'd be amazing.
But because he's a one man band, as it were, and he also mods motorbikes for people, he's currently away at a motorbike show. So we're going to sort of start talks and, yeah, potentially a pink guitar nerds collaborative.
That sounds incredible.
Hovercraft amplifier, which I think would be awesome. Because we could take all our input into it and kind of make something sort of pretty special. And it'll be in pink, the ultimate
the
colour.
Guitar nerds colour. Matt, for our listeners who aren't aware of Hovercraft, could you explain a little bit about the company and what they do?
Yeah, so Hovercraft Amplifiers are a amp building company out of Portland, Oregon, which seems to be the place if you're the manufacturer of custom build amplifiers or pedals.
Who else makes amps out of Portland, Oregon?
There is. Ooh, the name escapes me now. There's quite a few on like small boutique ones that I've seen on like Reverb, but I think a Dwarfcraft devices from there.
Mate,
there's
say,
a whole
say,
load of pedals.
We're not going to fact check yet. Just say it with confidence.
Yeah.
No, I can't say it with confidence because there's too many. But yeah, so he started modding amplifiers. I think about 5 or 6 years ago, something like that.
Right.
And he's just picked up a massive cult following around his amps because for a long time he was the only one building them.
Yeah.
Then they sort of got a team behind him. His website's always been sort of like
shonky.
Really basic and really bare bones.
He did make a Hello Kitty Dwarvenaut at one time, didn't he? Which I believe picked up in value quite a bit.
He did, yeah. So, I mean, he basically very rarely ever sends out any mail outs, never really does anything on social. And then every few months he'll be like, oh, I built this amplifier.
If you go onto his
usually
website...
usually gone, like, straight away. There's barely anything on his website.
Yeah, if you go onto his website, listeners, you'll find that you can't even really work out what he makes. It's sort of like a list of things that he has made, but no real indication of whether stuff's like current line or discontinued. It's hard to work out, but you can roughly get the idea that if you email the guy, he can probably build you a good amp.
Yeah, and I mean, bear in mind, it took him 6 weeks to respond to my email.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like, yeah, he doesn't necessarily, I don't know, I think he's just kind of slowly just plodding along.
As you've bought two, Matt, what sort of lead time are you looking at on a purchase?
I think if you managed to get hold of him and he was going to build you a custom one, I would imagine sort of 2 to 3 months.
That's okay. I mean, that's better. That's a better time scale than you'd be looking at for a custom built guitar from most.
Yeah, yeah. Considering that, I think sometimes his stuff's built from the ground up. Some of his is like recycled, like other amplifiers and things like that. I suppose, and usually it's like they come with loads of different options, but all of those have been like sort of removed from the website, because you used to be able to just go in and dial up a load of options and then just like send it off and someone would build it. But I think he had a much bigger team working for him at that point, so now it's just him.
Bizarre.
Sounds like quite a cool existence. I think he does it all out of his like his garage as well, just sitting there building motorbikes, building amplifiers.
They are proper super cool amplifiers. So Jay Cross running around the room rather slowly today.
Yeah,
how are you? How has your week been?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, week's been good. I went and recorded a demo with my new band this week.
Yes,
well,
you did.
Half a demo. We did a lot of it. We didn't finish it. We thought we'd maybe finish it in one day.
How many days did you? Oh, you just did a day.
Yeah, one day. We thought we'd be able to get 3 songs done in a day.
Of course.
Just a demo, you know, whatever. But actually, it turned out that we got everything sounding really good, and we were like, okay, we should probably do this properly then. So
that's cool.
So it was good. So drums sound really good. And then I mean, I don't know what it was, a Natal kit, I think. And then my bass was my bass.
Yeah, it was your Fender Precision bass, because you have
bass.
A 2012.
It's a little bit earlier than that.
Oh, is it?
It's not 2012, because 2012 is when they put the
custom shop pickups in.
It's pre 2012.
It's very nice. You've got a sort of relatively relicked Olympic white P bass with a torque guard.
Yeah, the person.
It's a maple neck.
Yeah, the person who owned it before me, I'm pretty sure, was a fairly heavy smoker.
Right.
So it's gone that like really sort of like like murky, creamy colour that Arctic White goes when it's
cool though.
It is really cool. Yeah, I do. We've had a conversation about this before, but I do really want to get a shell pink plate for it. Like,
I don't know if that would work. I know you've said it before, because we spoke about this with your offset telecaster.
For my offset telly, yeah.
I don't know if plates can ever go outside of the realms of,
I don't really like
white,
talk
black. Yeah, but what about mint or parchment?
A mint is the worst one, in my
what?
Opinion.
What? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? An Olympic white strap with a mint board and a mint scratch plate and parchment single coils. Come on, that's the one.
If it's white, I think torque guard looks the best.
I just don't really like torque, and like, I know that that's not what you're supposed to say, because
a bit busy, isn't it?
Well, I know it's vintage correct, and I've been getting a lot of flack recently for exacerbated by you, I think. It's your determination to ridicule me for, or put me on the spot in discussing modern guitars,
right,
has caused people to come out of the woodwork and have a go at me, which is fine. But like, to sort of like cut across that, I just don't really like tortoise. I just don't really like torque guards.
No, that's cool. I there's something to be said for the simplicity and plainness of the, you know. Well, I don't like white
not
plates.
White and white.
They always look white, black, white. Always look. White and white.
Yeah.
I'd never go white and white, but I do think like parchment or mint looks cool.
Maybe
black is a bit like, it's too Ramonesy.
That's not a thing. Too Ramonesy.
Yeah.
No. What do you mean too Ramonesy?
Well, it just looks a bit try hard 70s punk.
I don't understand why you're saying this is a negative. I can't get it. Well. But anyway, so we went Mark bass into an Ampeg SVT.
Oh, sorry, Mark bass into an Ampeg SVT.
Mark bass into an Ampeg, not SVT, Ampeg 8x10 classic 8x10.
Right, because of course you were messaging around on the morning to see if you could get hold of an amp.
Borrow an amp. Head, and then I just borrowed Mark's.
You borrowed Mark's. Right, yeah. I just didn't
really want to go around and bother him, but in the end, I did go around and bother
him. Which is great, because he's got the first series of
and they sound great.
Well, it's before they had a digital power stage, so they're actually great. They're solid state, completely solid state amps. I think they sound good. Did you use like a BB1X or a
I took my BB1X and I tried it and the Sans amp sounded a lot better.
Really? Well, the BB1X is pretty hot or not, I find.
Yeah, for sure.
Like we've said it loads of times, but I use it as a drive pedal, not as a preamp.
Yeah.
The Sans amp is just has a lot more range in it, has a lot more versatility. So
yeah,
and especially with something as sort of plain as a Mark bass, the Sans amp's ideal for going with that.
Yeah, and it was good. We utilized the, you know, like the through section of the Sans amp.
The direct out.
Yeah, so we took the affected signal, we put that into the DI and we just mic'd up the sort of just the raw sound of the P bass into the Mark bass into the 8x10.
Yeah,
it sounded amazing. So where we recorded in a studio called Southsea Sound, which is in Southsea in Portsmouth, and the live room is on the ground floor, and then the control room is on the first floor.
Right,
and like it's all really well soundproofed. But we like went down and like plugged the plug, you know, got everything synced up and ready to go, and I started playing, and I was like, well, I think there's like a delivery or something happening outside, like there might be like a crane going down the road. It was so rumbly, and I stood directly above this 8x10 that was cranked up most of the way, and it was just making the building shake. It was incredible. Like you couldn't hear it. You could just feel it, and it was absolutely amazing. I forgot how much like I do actually like recording.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where you sort of, when you don't do it for ages, you think, oh God, it's going to be a nightmare. Like, oh, I'm going to get my parts wrong, blah, 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 blah. And like, I did everything more or less like second time or something like that. So it was fine. But it's actually really fun.
Yeah. Like, it is loads of fun.
If you like go and do it properly, it's really, really fun.
Speaking of Ampeg 810s and things like that, I once did a recording a while ago in Brighton Electric, where I was going through a very purist phase, and I wanted to do all my bass parts like completely without any effects. I just wanted to use the old vintage amps, and so I was using my P bass, but we had a section that I needed to double track a part, and it needed to be distorted. The problem was that the amp I'd booked out, not thinking about it, was an Ampeg SVT2.
Okay.
Which, if either of you are familiar with the controls, it doesn't have an input and output volume. It just has a master.
Oh, right.
And a three-band EQ.
So super clean.
Yeah. So the only way to drive it was to put it in the middle of the drum room and just turn it up on full. And the big glass screen into the recording room was vibrating, was physically shaking with the volume that a cranked SVT2 through an 810.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the best. I should actually also mention, because I haven't mentioned it yet, but J-Cross, you're in the chat this evening on YouTube, because we are streaming this live. And what are we streaming this live on?
YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube. What is it called? It's Guitar Nerds Videos. That's
Guitar
it.
Nerds.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
YouTube. You've got to help me out with the link.
Sorry, I thought that was your sort of stumbly voice is the same as your like, I'm going to tell a joke.
And oh right.
They're not going to realise that it's a joke.
Oh, I see.
So
no,
I
no,
thought
that
you.
Genuine.
I thought you were going to give me some grief over something.
No. Yeah, no, it was completely genuine.
Guitar Nerds Videos. Yeah, YouTube.com/GuitarNerdsVideos.
So yeah, feel free to ask questions.
Speaking of, when I went to log on to this page, I happened to notice that whilst on the front page, on the like sort of our front page of YouTube here, we're streaming live. And also NASA are streaming live.
Yeah.
So
Who's got more views?
Yeah, NASA have got more views.
Really? Aww.
Yeah, I know. Weird, isn't it?
Space, what do they do? Go to space in that?
Yeah, no, they're
look
filming.
Look at pictures
filming
of George Clooney.
They're filming the Earth from
Matthew
space.
Matthew McConaughey.
So, thanks very much to the bunch of people that are watching us instead of the Earth.
I mean,
from
I can't
space.
Think of anything.
And we've just
more
lost
boring.
a couple of watches.
Yeah, everyone's so. Just realised. Oh, really? NASA. So this week I got a delivery of my. I shared it on the Facebook group, so you may have seen it already, listeners. But I got my electric death pedals.
Yeah,
comedian Cotwa pedal.
Yes.
So how did you find out about this?
So it's a one man operation in Brighton, electric death pedals. And actually in the guitar store I work out in GAK, Alex, one of the shop managers, was talking to the guys from Electric Death Pedals about getting his pedals in stock as we were sort of expanding our boutique range. And Electric Death Pedals are a very, very new company. So at the moment, they only exist on Instagram. I don't think they have a Facebook or anything like that. You have to email the fella directly in order to order a pedal or get a pedal. But the range he does is substantial. If you can find on Instagram Electric Death Pedals, he does actually, I did share this image as well, but he's done a few of those, you know, those sort of artsy top down pictures on a wooden yeah. floor of all his pedals arranged neatly, but the range is substantial and some of them are really interesting. Interesting effects anyway, but he takes a lot of pride in their appearance, which I think is cool. There was some discussion on the Facebook group over whether or not like the look of a pedal should ever impact on you buying it, but I kind of think like when you're collectors like all of we are, then yes, it absolutely does. And I really like that he themes things. He did some like aliens themed ones, some Terminator themed pedals. There's like a pulse rifle pedal from Aliens, which is really cool. And he did a whole series of Watchmen pedals. There's a Dr. Manhattan pedal, and there's the greatest superhero of all time, the Comedian pedal. There isn't a Rorschach one.
That's got to be coming. That's got to be some sort of
surely it should,
pedal,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, but the so I got the Comedian, which is a Cotwa, which is such it's such a great sound. Obviously, I didn't really get it for bass. It's not especially the sort of thing that would work on a bass guitar, but I think it's such a great tonal alternative for lead parts that's often overlooked in favor of a different sounding drive or maybe like a clean boost or something. But a Cotwa can really give something to your playing, and I think a Cotwa in front of a fuzz as well can create some really sort of interesting and unique sort of tonal options. That sort of quacky sort of Hendrix-y 70s sound.
And if you put
perfect.
It after a looper, you can kind of do all sorts of weird sort of like tonal shifts. I just found his Instagram, and he's got an amazing one called Double Trouble, which is the two like hands coming together in the fist from Predator, in the bit where yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger meets Carl Weathers.
Yeah.
And possibly the greatest manshake of all time.
Yeah, it's great. I love the cultural references that the electric death pedals come from. And actually, I have to say, like, presentation, when I received it, it was in this really lovely sort of black box with a band around it that was wax sealed with the electric death logo, which, you know, like wax stamp sealed, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
And they all his pedals come with a little note about them. About what inspired him to make the pedal, about what other sorts of effects he thinks would work well with this. It was really, like, really lovely personal touch, and I thought a really interesting, cool, unique company.
It's strange, yeah, because I'm just looking on his Instagram, and it's like all these like amazing looking pedals that are kind of just like one offs. And I suppose you kind of got to like always try and do something different, and then like find your pedal voice within that, because it's got to be so expensive. It's not like cheap to kind of do a different enclosure every time and screen print it differently every time, and
of course
build a different circuit every time. Once you mass produce something or you make something on bulk, obviously you can buy components, but like some of his stuff is, yeah, I like the little, he made a valve overdrive that looks like an orange pedal that's actually an orange Tolex.
Yeah, it's actually Tolexed. He's also done a Marshall, you know, sort of that really, you know, brings the term home, like
looks amazing.
Amp in a box term, where he's actually sort of Tolexed and wooden surrounded the effects, which is quite funny. I think they're really cool, really super unique.
I mean, something's just come up in the chat here. Robin has asked, how's he not going to get sued? And I think that, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons why it's a small time company on Instagram, you know. And us talking about it probably isn't doing anybody any favors. Well, but
yeah, I think these companies have bigger fish to fry,
I don't know, maybe I mean the orange
I think the cost of trying to sue someone who's making a couple pedals in
I don't know that it's necessarily true though, because I was doing some reading a little while back when we spoke a couple weeks ago.
I really
ago,
don't think we should be telling big companies about how easy it
we spoke a couple weeks ago about how Pedal Train have sort of kind of monopolized patented. Thank you. The design of a slatted pedal board that comes down at an angle.
Yeah.
And from what from doing some reading on a couple of forums, what somebody said was they actually have to challenge every design that looks similar to that, because if they don't, someone can use that as precedent to say, well, you know, they didn't challenge this. So, therefore they... So, you know, I don't... You know, yeah, you're probably right. We shouldn't go down the route of encouraging people to sue people who are doing cool, creative things on a small scale. And that's absolutely not what we're doing here. But, I thought it was interesting as a way to bring it back around to guitars, how that's sort of the deal with Pedal Train right now. Very weird.
Yeah, absolutely. So, anyway, that's kind of our intros over. And I wanted to, rather than us speaking about news, because actually at the moment we are having a kind of an epic news lull in the sort of the couple of weeks following NAMM 2017. So I wouldn't expect any big releases now for kind of a month or two. So in the stead of news, I wanted to kind of pose a question to Matt and Jay, or really sort of talk about a subject. And so I guess this week I wanted to talk about guitars that have broken boundaries, or to put it another way, guitars that were ahead of their time.
Okay.
Yes, and of course, like we spoke about this before when Matt, you and I spoke about this when we were talking about doing this subject. You mentioned, well, you know, of course, in many ways, the Telecaster and the Les Paul were guitars that were ahead of their time, but we were this line of discussion is more aimed at guitars that were ahead of their time, but so ahead of their time that they didn't catch on, and in some cases still haven't caught on.
It's funny because I think even today you kind of get guitars that I suppose it's so difficult to try and do something different and then it actually take off. Like I was talking about, was it Strandberg last week? You know, it's like to go, right, I'm going to be a guitar builder and not build something that looks remotely like a Strat Tele or a Les Paul. You know, actually do something like super radically different and go, who's into this? And I suppose in a way you've kind of got to like pull it back slightly, because, you know, I saw some pretty far out guitar designs and we talked about a couple last week and they keep popping up. And it's like, at what point do you like cross the line where like, this is too far? Yeah. Whereas just before that line, you're like, this is far enough that people will be into it, but it's not going to be, well, I suppose in a way with these ones ahead of their time.
Well, actually separately from the list I've put together, because of course this list is very retrospective, we're going to look at some old totally cool guitars that were really really forward thinking at the time, but actually one that was there at NAMM 2017, and I can't remember the name of the brand. I don't think I actually spoke to you guys about it. I think someone shared it on the group and I can't find the thread now, and I can't remember the name of the brand, even though I did follow their page. I'm just waiting for their page, something that they write to appear in my feed. There was a modular guitar brand at NAMM 2017. If anyone in the chat, or if anyone on the group afterwards listening
modular
to this,
is where,
it was a modular guitar brand, and it was a great idea. I loved it. It was hilarious as much as it was absolutely brilliant. So.
Well, I've talked about it before, and there was a guitar brand at one point that had holes in the back of the guitar, like uh-huh. a big square hole that you could put different wood blocks in like
that's
give
right.
your guitar like tonal variation.
And of course the Dan Armstrong, the plexiglass range of guitars they did, had removable pickups. Do you remember you could get a bladed mm-hmm. a bladed like P90 or a bladed humbucker?
Yeah. And you could move them up and down the neck, or yeah. up and down under the strings.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, Evie Gibson did that as well with the Ripper bass. The pickup in that was movable up and down. But this was fully modular. So the fella is sitting there with a rosewood necked double humbucking flying V, and he flicks a little catch at the back and takes off the two wings of the flying V. And fits two Strat wings. He then unclips the back where the pickups are, pulls the whole middle of the guitar out, and fits a three single coils on a different block. So it's blocks that either have, you know, two humbuckers fitted into them, like the whole midsection of your guitar, essentially.
Yeah.
Right.
So he fits in a block with three singles on. He then unclips something else, slots out the fretboard.
What?
And puts a maple board in because there are aluminium necks. Yeah, yeah. And he could slot the maple neck in.
I saw this guitar.
Yeah, did you?
I saw this guitar at Anderton's.
What?
A guy bought one in and he'd... it was certainly similar to this. He bought this guitar in that was like a metal neck that had a removable fretboard.
Yes, yes. That's
like removable pickups. Like everything could just be like clipped and unclipped.
Yeah.
So whether that was the same guy or not... And he was basically trying to make it out of like flight grade aluminium.
Yes,
so
everything
was.
That was the other thing. So the flying V was actually hollow. It was just the shape of a flying V in red. The Strat was white and was solid, but it was yeah. I think it was actually
maybe.
just a plastic.
Although
rather than a,
the one I'm seeing here is I've just had a quick look. Was it? Meg guitars?
No,
the modular electric guitar.
Meg was something that you sent us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Meg's different. Yeah.
Okay.
No, they're not the same. They're a company that's been going around about for a while. And yeah, I've read about them. But no, this was like a brand new 2017 thing. And I actually thought it was really cool. I didn't catch a price point for the guitars. I meant to do some more research on them.
Probably really
is it
expensive.
This? The Adapto.
No, it's not. No.
See, because so
I think that there have obviously been a few brands that have tried it, but this one managed to make it look quite cool. And
How much is it?
I don't know. That's the thing.
A point that's come up in the chat here is like, isn't that just going to be more expensive than buying than buying a flying V and a Strat, for example?
Probably not, and it's going to be more convenient to carry around because you can literally take, like, I don't know, a hold-all bag with your spare other fretboard and pickup options and body shape.
I mean, presumably these are like the majority of them are 3D printed.
Yeah, I would
so
imagine.
I mean, the thing is like, you know, I can see, maybe not this year, but probably next year, or, you know, within the next couple of years. You know how, like, the last couple of years have seen, like, we've been in this place of, like, people making boutique and cheap boutique pedals, like, have become, like, a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to spend a lot of money to get a cool, limited boutique pedal. And then you can go, nowadays, we're looking at sort of, like, you know, you look at,
Strymon?
No, amps. The little pink one that we had. The one that nearly won Gear of the Year.
Honey Boy,
thank you. Complete. I went blank for a sec. The Honey Boy, you know, you're looking at that now. We've got amp companies making small, cheapish boutique amps. With the rise of 3D printing.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing a lot of this, like, sort of, you know, real customized. Modern guitar, like boutique guitars, well, for not a huge amount of money.
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, sort of on that line, not quite sort of boutique guitars, but well, actually, I mean, I guess kind of, you know, Chapman guitars are sort of in that sort of
not doing like 3D printed.
No,
though,
not
3D
printed, but it is like an affordable sort of boutique guitar. And actually, kind of on that line, have you? I think I'm saying the thing wrong, but I think they're called something ridiculous like Eagle Centres or something like that. We've got one in Brighton. It's a Barclays funded arts centre.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's Barclays trying to cover up for sort of, you know, investing all our money in missiles by having some sort of some sort of like cultural arts centre for people in the middle of cities. But anyway, they've got one, and it includes it's not Eagle Centre. But it's equally naff a name. But anyway, they've
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
They have in there like a laser etching machine that you can go in and you can be trained on. You can go in of, like, I think it's Friday evenings. They do training sessions. And then once you're trained, you can then book a time to use it. And a fella who I vaguely know in Brighton has learnt how to do this and is now offering his ability to do that to laser etch finishes on guitars.
Oh,
so
very neat.
So
okay.
Textured, yeah. Finishes, loads of like geometric designs on guitars and things like that, which is totally super cool. I thought it was a really interesting, unique and example of like something that we just wouldn't have access to or wouldn't be affordable, you know, sort of 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
But back on track, so in this sort of line of, you know, guitars that were ahead of their time, I wanted to talk about a brand that I don't think we've ever spoken about. And if you've heard of this brand in the live chat or listeners afterwards, then let us know, because this was new to me when I was researching. Electra is the name of the company, and they made a specific range of guitars called the MPC series, which started in 1971. And what was really unique about these guitars was that they ran off of a 9-volt battery. This is 1971.
Okay.
And essentially had two modular circuits inside the guitar.
Yeah.
That dealt with, that were effects.
Okay, built in.
Built in, but they were modular.
Yeah, built-in effects.
Yeah, so they did 12. They did a set of 12 different effects, and you could fit whatever two you wanted and control them, because they were Japanese. They were made in, what's the name of the famous factory? I always forget. Matt Knight.
These ones, I don't know if these ones were built in. I was just having a look. Because I know we were talking about and the Roland guitar earlier. I don't know if these were built in the same.
Oh, okay.
Factory.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I'm wrong, but they were Japanese nonetheless, weren't they? And they.
I think because I've got a feeling that in the sort of 70s, there was just a lot of Japanese engineers and companies building these guitars, and then at, say, like the NAMM show, they would turn up at the NAMM show, and then like someone would take them on in America to distribute them, and that's why they kind of made it into the like Western market.
Yeah.
But then they never really took off, probably due to expense.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at the circuits that they came with, and I'm like, or you could buy, and I'm like, they had
incredible.
A phaser,
yeah,
basically a crybaby
power drive, a phase shifter. An octave box, yeah, there were loads, and the cool thing about them, they did like Les Paul shapes, but they also they did become popular for a short time because their most famous models were actually like a signature model for the Outlaws, and the guitars were named after the band, but they were a very strange and unique. Sort of double cut shape with a really fat bottom, and then where you would normally have your sort of Les Paul rhythm treble switch, instead of there they've got like a rotary where you would select between the effects and different pickups. So the rotary dealt with like 7 or 10 different options, which were each a different pickup with a different one of your effects, and yeah, it really weird. But I found like a blog on the guitar about the guitar, where a fella's talking about how he worked in a guitar shop in the States in the 70s, and he's saying you would be appalled now at how many people came in and chopped in their Gibson Les Pauls.
Oh wow.
And walked out with an Electra MPC, because I guess then it was, you know, it was the latest thing.
Well, this is the thing, you know, the resurgence of a 59 Les Paul was due to the kind of British explosion of kind of blues, you know, Eric Clapton, Peter Green. After Les Paul, 59 Les Pauls were basically discontinued and no one wanted them. So, you know, then I suppose you take it another 10 years and you're looking at 20-year-old guitar. Why would you want to buy a 20-year-old Les Paul when you can get this thing that's got effects in it?
yeah that's it. But
so Rory in the chat here is just saying that he seems to remember that each effect had two control knobs that came through. I wonder if you were able to, like, could you like choose the, could it be like early pedal boards, like could you choose the order in which they went in, like delay into reverb, or like doing something weird, like delay into fuzz or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I've no idea the ins and outs of it. I mean, the guitar came, other than its rotary, it had four normal knob controls, and then two very oversized like two-way switches on there as well. But
right.
I'm not sure the ins and outs of the controls, but yeah, just what a ridiculous. And but the thing is, at the time, like we're talking about that being ridiculous, right? Yet the Variax surely is a standard thing. This was a Variax in 1971,
an analog Variax, though.
Yeah, but you know,
which inherently makes it a lot cooler.
That it's true. I don't know why. I don't know why this didn't. I don't know why this hasn't stood the test of time. Like. The Variax, the Gibson Firebird X, these are all versions of that.
Because I don't think people want... They don't want to control their effects with their guitar.
The Variax sales,
I suppose it's a case
would
of,
suggest otherwise.
Of course not. But not I in think comparison the amount to of people non-Variax there actually, guitars.
Yeah, well, yeah, true. But it's still a good enough sales to keep that guitar alive for nearly 20 years now.
Yeah.
Although the Variax is like more guitar modelling than it is effects, I think, isn't it? And
true.
I think guitar modelling maybe is something slightly different, but it's that kind of thing is like, just because you can make it, should you?
Yeah, there is that.
You know, it's kind of a weird one. I mean, I see there's still a company in some way, shape or form. They've got a website and everything.
That. Ridiculous. I wonder
but
if they still
don't make
it.
The same guitars.
Ah, that's a shame. That's a shame, because that would be.
But
a
I suppose
cool
it's yeah, it's one of those things where guitar people like different guitar sounds, but then when you start adding effects, people are like, I'd rather have a pedal. And it is kind of weird because,
well,
modelling a guitar is the same sort of thing, really.
Speaking then of guitars that offered you more guitar-related controls, I don't think we can talk about guitars that were ahead of their time without mentioning the Epiphone professional outfit, which we have spoken about a few times before. Matt Knight, would you be confident to talk us through the outfit?
You know a bit about this, I think. This was the one that came with the amp as well,
didn't it? That's right. You could only buy
because
it as a
set. Saw this at the Gibson Museum.
Yeah.
The Epiphone Museum when I went. And, yeah, I don't think many of these exist.
No, well, they actually...
I think it was like 200, I think, something like that.
I think it was the first or one of the first things that Gibson did with Epiphone. So it was one of the first things that happened since... the Epiphone Gibson merger, I think. Now these were only made for 2 years between 62 and 64, and yeah, it was an outfit. It was a guitar that came with an amplifier, but the amplifier was very unique in that it had one control.
And was everything that else basically everything else was on the guitar,
yeah,
and you controlled everything on the amp via the guitar.
That's right, yeah.
And was it just a standard standard jack input?
Nope.
No.
Right.
No, I think it was a special cable.
Yeah. A really chunky, like alarmingly chunky sort of custom cable that wasn't even a standard thing on the market, specifically designed for this. It was kind of like, looked a bit like an oversized MIDI.
Right, okay.
It was like a multi-pin circular in. And yeah, so the guitar itself then came with... And it was the layout of the controls on this, which was, I think, mad as well, because it had the volume and tone for the guitar. The guitar that it came with just had a single humbucker in the neck position. And it was a 335 style guitar. And it had one volume and one tone control for the guitar in the normal position. But the controls for the amplifier were... above the strings, so as in where they would be if you were a left-handed player playing a right-handed guitar, as in where you're going to knock them.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
But yeah, Matt, do you know much more about these and how they work, like the tonal options that you got?
Yeah. So basically, I had a thing called the Tone Expressor, which are the five switches. And now, if I remember rightly, this was like variable tone controls, so like preset EQ. You could then turn reverb and tremolo on and off via switches. You then had reverb amount and then tremolo depth and then like a frequency control, which was all on the like upper part of the guitar, so above the low E string. And then you had standard volume and tone for the guitar neck pickup. It's just a crazy design.
Yeah.
So weird. But I suppose it's, yeah, like I say, with things that were kind of a bit ahead of their time with the Variax, I suppose, when we talk about the Dream Rig that I had for a while, Variax into Pod into DT25, where you're physically controlling analog valve, you know, you're digitally controlling the valve state or the, you know, what valves you're running, which preamp valves you're running, and adding effects all from the guitar. It is effectively the same thing, except this was all analog.
Yeah, exactly. It was a ridiculously ahead of its time guitar. I guess not something that we've... Has there been anything since? Is there anything modern that requires an amp? I mean, I guess Gibson returned to this sort of thing with the Firebird X. Oh, we should explain what a Firebird X is.
So I was going to do. Yeah. So the Firebird X was a guitar that came out in like 2012, I want to say. 2012, 2013. And the problem, there was a couple of problems with it. So it was a weird looking futuristic Firebird that came with its own like pedal board, and you could change the effect. Yeah, it had like built-in effects and stuff, and you could... Matt, is that right? Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah.
So,
but a lot of the effects were on the guitar. They were on like the top
Yes, they were.
The shoulder,
am I saying that? Yeah, it's sort of
like on the very top. So you'd look down at where you'd find a tuner on an electroacoustic. Yeah. That was where the controls were.
So, the, like, you know, it had all these effects built in, and it was designed to be like this ultra-modern guitar for the sort of, you know, ultra-modern guitarist. And, you know, up to that point, I'm more or less with you. That's, you know, that's fine. The problem is this came at a time when... This was kind of part of a series that Gibson produced all around about the same time. So 2009 or 2008, we saw the introduction of the Gibson Dusk Tiger.
I have no idea what that is.
The Dusk Tiger was a really horrible looking Les Paul that was the first... with robot tuners.
Really?
Not the first with robot tuners.
I thought the X series was the first robot tuner.
So, no, and that's the thing, is it sort of came as, like, it was the next one in the series. So there was the Dusk Tiger, which came first.
Right.
And it had, like, this, like, wooden plate on top, and it...
No? I was going to say, you forgot before that, it was the Darkfire.
Oh, see, I thought the Darkfire came next. Okay, so in that case, the Gibson Darkfire was first.
These sound like my guitars.
And it was awful. And then they brought out the Dusk Tiger, which also had the robot tuners.
That is the worst name. And, I mean, you can see where Apple got their name for iOS's.
The thing is like, the first one, that so the Darkfire was like... The robot tuners didn't work very well.
Right.
It was like a complete, like, they looked really, it was a very esoteric look. Like, it was like, yeah, you know, metal.
Yeah.
And then they brought out the Dusk Tiger, kind of to be like, okay, people didn't like the Darkfire because of its aesthetics. How'd you like this then? And it was like even worse. Like, it looked like a dinner plate. It was awful. And then they, after the like complete failure that was, they then brought out the Firebird X, which went completely the other direction. It had loads more stuff on it. The robot tuners were a bit better, but not that much better.
There was a problem with the robot tuners on the X.
Yes.
It was that you couldn't actually tune them off of the guitar.
No, you had to use the...
It was the display on... Yeah. You could only see the tuning on the foot pedal.
The other issue is that it only came in this, like, super bonkers finish, okay?
Yes.
So my problem with all of these guitars that Gibson did is it was all or nothing.
Yeah.
It was either, right, you want something weird, you want something looks weird and does loads of weird stuff. Here you go, here's all of that in one. It's like, well, not necessarily. And that's why I think something like the Variax has like relatively stood the test of time, because they look kind of normal. Like, they don't look super normal, but like, yeah, they look relatively normal.
I'd liked, you know, the James Tyler's.
Well, whereas the Firebird X was just so out there, it was never going to be, and it was $3,500.
Yeah, that was the
problem. The crazy thing is like, I remember, because, you know, I worked in the store the whole way through the introduction of Robot Tune on Gibson, all the way through to Firebird X, and then obviously onto kind of 2015 when it was only robot tuners. And the one thing that I always thought was brilliant that never ever took off, and they only did it on, I think, the Dusk Tiger, maybe the Darkfire, because it definitely wasn't on, as far as I remember, on the Firebird X, was Chameleon Tone, which was, you can, those two guitars, Darkfire and Dusk Tiger, came with a particular interface box that you had to plug into your computer that then allowed you to do custom tunings, so completely customizable tunings, and then completely customizable pickups. You could actually change the EQ curve of the pickups. You could, because you had two humbuckers and a piezo, you could even change the EQ curve of the piezo to change different type of like acoustic sounds.
Oh,
basically,
that's amazing.
Like
a
completely like modular instrument in terms of the way you could make it sound. But because the guitar was so expensive, and I'm assuming the R&D cost was so expensive, they never recouped the cost, so the technology never really took off because it didn't get in hands of enough people.
Yeah, yeah.
And the problem was, they were saying, oh, if you need to send it back, you've got to send it back to Gibson because it needs to go on a special like anti-static table and be repaired.
And it's like, honestly,
you know, and that was the one thing, because I honestly thought the Dusk Tiger was brilliant for that. The difficulty being a store guy for that time was it was almost impossible to demo. And that was the problem with the Firebird X, was that you had to plug in these two Bluetooth
pedals. It was Bluetooth.
Yeah, that was it. The
Wait, when did it come out? Didn't you say it was like 2012?
No, I think the X might have been earlier.
I think it was 2011. 2012.
They went for Bluetooth in 2011.
I remember that moving the foot pedals were motorized. So if you move the volume knob on the guitar, it moved the foot pedal.
What?
I only demoed it for a customer once.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
They were crazy. I remember our friend Nick, who used to work for Gibson, came in and demoed it to me once, and it was just like, you know, because it's got trem and delay and reverb all built into it, and that was controllable on the kind of, you had the blue coloured top horn, then you had the red and the grey one, then you had all the robot tunings. At that point weren't the ones that go on the back of the headstock, they were controlled from the extra volume pot. So you had to kind of like remember what all the different ones were and then click it down. And it was just like modern guitars ahead of their time, definitely. And the thing is, all that tech just died.
Yeah.
Like, where did it go?
Yeah.
It's so bizarre because the amount of time they must have spent in just their chameleon tone alone, you know, being able to modulate completely these pickups, you would have
The thing is it like, you know, I really do, you know, I know that you give me a lot of grief over saying that I'm looking back to, you know, 1952 and harking back to that beautiful era, and to a certain degree that's true, but I do think that innovation is important. I really do think that innovation is important. However, I think that innovation should be moderated. Well, and if they'd made the Firebird X and they'd done it in black, I don't think we'd be having quite this conversation.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know,
it's
like, if they'd done it in Sunburst, then, you know, fair enough. The fact that they did it in that, like, bonkers colour, that it just made it so esoteric.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
You know,
I hear what you're saying.
The thing.
Well, speaking of guitars that had absolutely no concept of the word moderation, we should talk about one of your company, Matt's previous endeavours in the guitar world, the Roland GS500, which was
the guitar that started it all.
The guitar that started it all, which actually, genuinely, it's a guitar that looks like a joke meme about a guitar with too many controls on it, because there are, I could count them, I will guess, around 15 knobs and switches on the GS500 in total.
So this is a weird one. So the GS500 at the time, now I actually, bizarrely enough, before you even sent the email about what we were going to talk about in the podcast, me and my colleague Jay were actually having a conversation about stories about particular products throughout the Roland and Boss history.
Right.
And the GS500... actually got stolen before its first ever world debut at this Australian guitar show.
What?
It got stolen. So they basically said, but it got stolen without the cable that would connect the GR500 and the GS500.
Right, great.
So basically the GS500 also came with a synthesizer, the GR500, that interconnected with a 24-pin cable. So basically, they valued this guitar at $1 million because that's the cost of the tech that the R&D that they put into it to build it.
What?
But then basically said, it's worthless because you don't have this cable. And it ended up getting returned. Although it missed the Australian show for its debut, it did actually get returned. And then they were able to show the guitar.
That's ridiculous.
It was almost the thing that was never ever going to be released. Wow. But it only happened that someone returned it, that it basically ended up coming out. But effectively, the GS500 was the first ever synthesizer guitar.
Yeah.
It was built by the Ibanez factory, the FujiGen factory,
and again,
in 77, I think.
Yeah, yeah, and very similar to the Electras that we spoke about earlier, came in a Les Paul-esque finish or body shape.
Yeah, And there was a couple of things on here, because obviously it was pre-MIDI.
Yeah.
And obviously everything was analog. So you were basically controlling a real analog synthesizer with your guitar.
Right.
But the one thing that was on it that carried on into modern day was that they basically painted it and designed the first ever infinite sustain module for pickups.
Really?
They basically, yeah, invented an infinite sustain pickup.
Because the pickup display on them is quite weird. The humbucker, obviously, in the bridge, has its own individual pieces, which I assume mean so the strings can each be isolated and assigned an instrument.
It's got the first ever divided pickup.
Right.
So like you'd get on a GK pickup now if you're going to run a GR55 or something similar. This had a divided pickup, so like a small humbucker for each string. Which would then send different note values depending on what string you're hitting. And then, yeah, that went into the GR500, which was the analog synth that kind of basically came with it. I have no idea how much these were new, but I can only imagine they were really expensive.
Yeah, what an absolutely brilliant and bonkers guitar.
See, this is an example. Like, if you look at a picture of this, and listeners, I hope you get a chance to, you know, go and check this out. If you look at a picture of this, this looks like a guitar.
Right, what's your point?
It doesn't look like the Gibson Firebird X. Like, they've done like a pretty good job of making this look like the thing that it actually is.
Yeah.
You know, this is very much, right, how can we get some tech into a guitar? Not how can we...
Yeah, just how, go
you know,
too
Do you know
far.
What I mean? Like, that's... Yeah, I think it looks quite... I mean, I would obviously never buy one.
Well,
but it looks all right. Yeah.
I'd love to try one. I've seen one, but I've never plugged one in. I'd love to try it.
But the problem is
that these all too often turn up minus the GR500 or minus the cable.
Yes,
had the third version of this guitar, the 707, which was their shark fin shaped one with the massive.
When did you have that?
Yeah. I remember.
I actually, bizarre story. So this, I had a Roland, what was it? It was G70. Let me get the right model number. Yeah, G707. Basically, it looks like a shark fin with a horn that goes from the body all the way over the neck and then joins at the headstock.
Because they did a bass as well, didn't they?
They did. And I saw one last week that had Sims LEDs fitted to the fretboard, which was hilarious. but basically, when I lived in Brighton, I shared with a few other people, and a guy came to, basically was moving house, and he had to store all his stuff for a couple of days. And behind all these boxes, I came down and spotted this headstock. I went, oh, you've got a guitar, and pulled it out, and it was one of these guitars. And he went, oh, yeah, I've had it for ages, not really into it. And I just went, that's bonkers, I'll buy it off you. And he went, 50 quid? So I was like, I will definitely buy that for 50 quid.
That's amazing.
So I did. And then I eventually traded it for a custom modded Juno 106, which had like wooden end cheeks and was like matte black with blue LEDs, which I super regret now because they're worth about £700 or £800.
Because there was actually a series in between what we've been talking about and that as well, because they ran a bass version of that as well, and Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy played one for a while, and he'd ripped out all the synthesizer electrics and just used it as an ordinary
girl
bass.
Boy.
Yeah. Girl boy. The problem is with the 707 was that I didn't have a cable, and basically you couldn't use it unless
you
had
not
a cable.
Get a cable?
And
there,
it was it.
Not have one made?
No, well, I did look to have one made, and some company was like, it was going to cost hundreds of pounds because I'm going to have to custom wire 24-pin to like 13-pin. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm sure someone with a bit more time and a bit more knowledge can do it. But I do miss that guitar, though.
Great
Ridiculous
guitar.
In so many ways.
Well, gentlemen, we are fast coming up on time, and we've got to do things like talk about all the various ways you can listen to us and read out the Patreon backers and things like that. So very quickly, I just wanted to get in a little bit of Guitar Nerds Forum News.
Okay.
I just thought I'd point out some things that were cool that had happened on the forum this week, just in case any sort of listeners, viewers missed them or aren't on the forum and wanted to get involved. We had the chap at Paragram Guitars a while back post up some 3D renders of a guitar that he was looking to build and asking for our input. And a lot of you replied to him, made suggestions, things like that, and he's taken some of those things into consideration, and he's now built the guitar, and he's shared that on our group recently. But he set up a Facebook group for his first guitar build, and I'm sure the first of many, which is facebook.com/paragram guitars. Totally worth going to check out. And also, if you haven't seen, someone shared the skateboard guitars blog. Which is skate spelt in the
Avril Lavigne
way, sk8boardguitars.wordpress.com, which is a really awesome and interesting blog and story about how he built a laminated Vox Phantom guitar out of multicolored skateboard bits.
Okay.
Which is really, really awesome and unique, and a totally cool guitar. And why isn't there a Vox Phantom in current production?
I think there is, isn't there? But they're just really, they're like a bit cheap and a bit crap.
No, it's discontinued now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've discontinued it, which is a sad shame. But it was a shame they went for a cheap one. It was like, just make them good.
Yeah, completely.
People buy the old ones for loads of money. Just
especially
make them good.
I was actually very surprised that this year at NAMM there wasn't like a resurgence of those, because this is the 60th? 50th?
Is it?
70th?
Of what?
60th, I think, anniversary of Vox.
Really?
I think this 1957? Year.
There are loads of anniversaries this year. Ashdown are 25.
It's not quite as impressive, is it?
Boss have got their DS1 being 40.
Yeah.
My Guitar Shop's 25.
Yeah.
That's about it.
But yeah, Vox is, I think it's 60. I think they were 1957.
Does it count now that they're
owned by Korg?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, because it's still Vox, isn't it?
I guess so, yeah. They are still wicked acts.
You can't be talking about Epiphone being like, oh, what great heritage. And then, you know, I think it still counts.
Fair enough. They are super cool. Anyway, we need to wrap this podcast up. So, J-Cross, what do we normally do here? We normally say, thanks very much, everyone, for listening, and we say where you can listen to us. Where can you listen to us?
Listen to us.
Whatever. Do some stuff. What are people supposed to do?
If you are into this podcast and you would like to help support this podcast, you can head over to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where you can become a Patreon backer of Guitar Nerds. For $1 a month, you just... Don't worry about that. Like, it's just a thanks. You get the podcast ad free. So maybe do worry about the podcast. Maybe do worry about that. You get the podcast ad free, and you get the show notes, which is what I've been doing here whilst I've been. You might hear me drop my pen occasionally. It's on the rare occasion that I don't catch it when I do a good spin, just like that. Or you can for $5 a month, you become one of our. Our mid-level Patreon backers, which means you get access to the extra half an hour of podcasts that we record every week, which we will be doing in a moment.
Haven't we got like the last episode of Branton Rant on coming up?
We are also running a bunch of mini series at the moment. The final episode of Branton's Rant On.
Well,
is this week.
It's the mid-series finale.
The mid-series break.
But it is a finale.
Is it?
I think I need
is
to make that clear. It's not a cliffhanger, but there are proper microphones getting thrown around the room.
Okay.
It's good.
Excellent.
It's aggressive.
So we're running a bunch of mini-series. There's that. I'm going to be doing some stuff, interviewing some recording engineers. That's coming up. We've got a bunch of interviews coming up and stuff like that. And for $10 a month, you get all of the previous stuff that we just talked about. And also, your name read out as a huge thanks, somewhat like this.
Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve, Michael Blair, Toms, Carlos Mancher, Andrew Marco, Marcos,
Danny Short, Annie McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Paul Colgan, Jack, Godfrey Wayne, Claire Scott O'Brien,
Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie, Anstis Moore, Gavin Coley, London Song.
That was it.
Yeah. Good riff, that. Good intro riff.
Yeah, that was actually pretty.
I always really like. I like back when I first heard that song.
Yeah.
By Michael Jackson. Yeah. I was always like, that sounds great. I wish that carried on. It never carried on. You can also follow us on Instagram, which is at Guitar Nerds. You can follow us on Twitter, which is at Guitar Nerds. You can follow us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/GuitarNerds page, which is, we're going to be posting a lot more up there, and you can share the articles and stuff, which is going to make stuff a lot better
stuff.
You can also join the group on facebook.com/GuitarNerds
forum.
Not group.
Not group, that doesn't exist.
I think that's it. That's, or you can follow us individually. You can follow Matt underscore Nightsy, Joe Yosef underscore 900. My Twitter is JAYBM1, and Mark's is Mark underscore random.
That is it. We're there. We've made it to the end.
Mark's definitely going to be back next week.
Hopefully, Mark isn't going to be such a wimp, and he will be back hosting the podcast, which means I can return to being the comic foil of this podcast. Thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in, whether you're watching or listening in the future. We will be back next week with more fun. We'll see you then.
Cheers, guys.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
I've got to work out how to stop it again now. I'm just going to wave. Wave. Bye. Bye. Farewell. Well, that's it. We're there.
Is it off?
Well, I hope so. I'll put it back to this intro card.
Okay,
I haven't stopped it here.
It says we're offline.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to stop recording.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.